important. So there's that. Representative Green, you have some guests.
I do.
The chair recognizes you. If you'd like to introduce your guests, please.
Thank you, Chair. I do have some special guests today. So we have a group of interns that have been with us all day today from Edina High School. You guys want to put your arms up? Wave.
You can stand up, please.
Yeah. Please stand up. You can stand up. They just came from meeting with the chief clerk, with Pat Murphy for a while, and Chair Kreisha just talked with them, and Representative Rapinski this morning met with us first out of the gate to just talk about what it's like to be a legislator. So hopefully you guys have had a good experience today. So
thank you and welcome to the committee. You can applaud. I'll let that happen. So with that, members, bills can be taken up in any order. Representative Clardy, we're going to start with House File 984. Are you ready to present your bill? And so while Representative Clardy is getting ready, I'll go ahead and move House File 984 with the chair's intent to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in a later omnibus bill. Representative Clardy. And Representative Clardy, you do have a testifier. So, Representative Clardy, welcome to the committee, and your testifier, welcome. House File 984 is in front of the committee. To your bill, Representative Clardy.
Thank you so much, Chair and committee, for seeing Bill HF 984. So I'm just going to provide a big overview, and then I have Tim here, and he's with Mindependent, so he and some other testifiers will be going over it. So as you know, in the 70s, the state proposed a bunch of legislation to ensure that every child, no matter what school they're from, get access to special ed, counseling, health services, textbooks, and transportation. So currently, students in non-public schools do not receive access to counseling in grades K through 6. Like their counterparts in the public schools. So today's non-public school students only receive counseling services in grades 7 through 12. So this bill's proposal is to look at providing services for the K-6 students. We know that these services are needed with the younger students. We also know that our students oftentimes go through public schools and then they go to private schools, so they're transitional. And I'm thinking specifically about a student that I had an encounter with. His family was thinking that he would be removed from the current public school because of an action that he took. And so he went to a private school, and then after that all settled down, he's back in the public school. So that example right there shows the importance of why students, all students, need counseling or access to those services, K-12. And at this point, I'm going to turn it back to you, Chair, so you can call my testifier, Tim Bentz from Mindependent, and he's here to provide some additional information.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Mr. Bentz, if you state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tim Bentz, and I am president of Mindependent. We are the largest statewide organization representing the non-public schools in Minnesota. We have 180 non-public schools in our organization that enroll more than 41,000 students. First, I would like to take the opportunity to thank Representative Clardy, Perez Vega, and Bake Berg for co-authoring this important legislation. I'm here to testify in support of House File 984, which expands counseling to non-public students in grades K through 6. As Representative Clardy referenced, beginning in 1975, Minnesota's legislature enacted legislation to provide certain services and students regardless of their educational setting. Minnesota Statute 123B40 states, quote, so that every school pupil in the state shall share equitably in education benefits. This statute embraces the concept that certain programs are for the common good of the students of Minnesota. Minnesota is not an outlier when choosing to invest in students attending non-public schools. Many states have comparable programs, and in addition, there are federal requirements in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, as well as IDEA, to provide equitable services to students in non-public schools. While some schools are fortunate and are able to provide limited options to their youngest learners, a vast majority of non-public students do not have access to these important resources. The expansion of these services would open up counseling services and supports to more than 44,000 students in grades K through 6 in non-public schools. You'll hear from testifiers today regarding the issues and challenges facing students today, and we fully realize these are not limited to one sector or one student type. As you know, getting legislation across the finish line can sometimes take quite a while, and this is one of those pieces of legislation. I look back at the history of this proposed legislation and found a very interesting fact. I'm not sure if this is irony or serendipity, and the educators on this committee can correct me on that. So while many of us would prefer not to, I'll take you back to March 4th, 2020. We all know what was looming on the horizon for our society and particularly our students and families. 5 years ago today, March 4th, 2020, this bill had a committee hearing. Since then, students have endured incredible challenges, trauma, anxiety, and interruptions. While students continue to make strides, there's still much recovery and support needed. You will hear from those in our schools and those working with students. They can provide great context and on-the-ground perspectives. In closing, I encourage members of this committee to support House File 984 that provides critical service to non-public students. Thank you for this opportunity today, and I am happy to answer any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benz, for your testimony. And with that, Mr. Benz, I'm going to ask you to step away for just a moment while we bring other public testifiers up. Please stay close by in case we have further questions for you. And Mr. Benz, to one of your comments about moving this forward, Representative Clardy, I apologize. I should have added my name to this bill sooner, and I will go ahead and do that after this committee. So with that, public testifiers, and I have Ms. Carver from the Phoenix School. And then I have Ms. Weiss, and I don't believe I have any students, so.
No.
Okay. So if you come up and try to keep your testimony within 2 to 3 minutes, we should be on time. Okay. And Chef Harris, you're sitting in. Got it. Okay. Elizabeth Carver, if you want to begin, state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair and distinguished members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Elizabeth Carver. I work as the Chief of Operations for Phoenix School Counseling, where we serve over 20,000 students at 75 non-public schools throughout the state. I am here to testify in support of House File 984. And thank you so much for your leadership on this. As we look toward building a brighter future for our children, one of the most crucial investments that we can make is in their mental health and starting at the youngest ages. Counseling services, especially in elementary school and middle schools, are essential not only for providing students with support during crises, but also importantly for preventing those crises from ever taking root. Early intervention through counseling has been proven to be one of the most effective ways to address the challenges our children face today. Whether those challenges come from academic stress, family difficulties, bullying, mental health struggles like anxiety and depression, we know that counseling makes a difference. Indeed, the research shows us that every $1 spent in early intervention saves as much as $11 in later stage, more intensive intervention. I want to share a story that I believe illustrates the impact of early counseling. Last year, I was supporting a counselor who was working with a young student. He was a second grader, whom I'll call Sam. Sam came from a challenging home environment and had started to show significant signs of withdrawing from school. He was becoming increasingly anxious. He was struggling with concentration and had extremely difficult behaviors in the classroom. Within just a few weeks of receiving counseling services, Sam began to open up about the pressures he was feeling both at home and with friends and at school. His counselor was able to help him develop meaningful coping strategies to help him build resilience and to strengthen his self-esteem. His transformation was nothing short of remarkable. He was able to not only improve his grades, but he also became more engaged in the class. He built new friendships with his classmates, and he demonstrated leadership qualities that we didn't even know were there. This is the power of early intervention. Counseling is not just about helping students in crisis. It's about creating a supportive environment where students feel heard and valued and equipped to handle any emotional challenges that come their way now or in the future. Without adequate funding, many students, like Sam, will not have access to this preventative support when they need it most. I urge you to approve this expansion and funding for counseling services to our youngest grades to pass the House File 984, to invest in our children's mental health now to help them grow into reliable, resilient, capable adults. Thank you for your consideration, and I am available for questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Carver. Mr. Harris, welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shepard Harris. I am with Frederickson Government Relations. I'm here on behalf of MACE. Obviously, I'm not Ann Weiss. Unfortunately, she's feeling under the weather, so I'm here to read her testimony today. But first, on behalf of MACE, we definitely would like to say thank you to Representative Clardy for continuing to be the chief author of this bill, in particular this year, House File 984. Chair Kreisha, thank you very much for your support and comments you just made a few minutes ago. Representatives Perez Vega and Bakerberg for being co-authors as well on this bill. Now for Ms. Weiss's testimony. Mr. Chair and Representatives, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Ann Weiss, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Independent Schools and a former lower school and upper school learning interventionist. I'm here to urge you to support the expansion of non-public pupil counseling aid because I have seen firsthand the profound impact early intervention has on student success. Research consistently shows that early intervention in school counseling leads to better academic and social outcomes for students. The American School Counselor Association reports that elementary school counseling services improve academic achievement, classroom behavior, and emotional regulation, helping students develop skills that set the foundation for lifelong success. Studies have also found that students who receive early school-based mental health interventions show significantly lower rates of discipline referrals and higher rates of academic engagement. Beyond the research, I want to share a real story, one that highlights just how critical early intervention can be. One of my students lost his mother to an opioid overdose. A year later, his father was murdered. A child in this kind of unimaginable trauma is at extreme risk of academic disengagement, behavior struggles, and long-term mental health challenges. But because he had access to a school counselor, he learned life-changing coping strategies. Instead of shutting down or dropping out, he stayed engaged in school, found support, and built the resilience needed to keep moving forward. This is what early intervention does. It gives students hope and tools for the future when they need it most. Early intervention works. It prevents small struggles from becoming crises. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, 50% of lifetime mental health conditions begin at the age of 14. And school-based support is one of the most effective ways to provide early help. School counselors are not just responding to crises. They are equipping students with skills that improve classroom climate, increase graduation rates, and reduce long-term social costs. The need has never been greater. Families rely on our schools to help their children navigate today's challenges, and counselors are essential partners in that work. I urge you to pass this bill and invest in the well-being and future success of all Minnesota students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris, for your testimony. And with that, I'll call up Carmen Grace Poppert and Kyle Rickbile. Make sure I get those correct. And feel free to correct me on the pronunciations.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And members of the one moment. Ms. Poppert, if you would state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm humbled to speak to you today on this crucial topic. My name is Carmen Grace Poppert. I'm the Director of Academics and Elementary School at Risen Christ in Minneapolis. Today I'm here to testify in support of House File 984. Risen Christ Catholic School serves as a community hub for children and families, whether it's educating our students, providing child care, before care school enrichment, parent education classes, community dinners, or security for our families, hosting cultural celebrations, or many other important events. To give you a background on our school, we serve 315 students in grades kindergarten through eighth grade, with a population of 95% Hispanic and Latino students. 90% of our Risen Christ students are eligible for a free or reduced lunch, and 96% of our students receive tuition assistance. The average household income for a family of four at our school is $39,500. Our student makeup is unique to other private Catholic schools, where the majority of our families cannot pay the full price of tuition. Many of our families are new to the country and have many challenges in their day-to-day functions. Because so many of our families are new to the country, a school counselor might be their only contact with someone who can provide them resources for their family. A school counselor might be their only support for mental health. With the growing need of mental health services in our state, having a school counselor in our building is not only a resource to our students, but also a bridge for our families to our community resources. During the 2019 school year, I was a first grade teacher at Risen Christ, and I saw how the pandemic greatly affected our students' social and emotional well-being. Our school was also impacted by the riots that erupted after the murder of George Floyd, because we're located 3 blocks from George Floyd Square, and many of our families live near the Lake Street area of Minneapolis. During the riots, our students and families lost their homes to arson, heard gunshots outside of their windows, and had to flee their homes to find safer refuge. Needless to say, when my first graders returned to school in person, I saw firsthand how the trauma of the pandemic and the riots had affected their mental health, and I was at a loss to be able to provide them with adequate mental health support and counseling. I ask you all to please consider supporting House File 984, because by providing counseling and mental health services to our students in the elementary grades, we're able to provide early interventions so that students, when students leave Risen Christ or another non-public school and they attend a public high school or charter high school or another non-public high school, they have these tools to be successful since they've received these services at a younger age. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to Representative Mary Frances Clarity for introducing House File 984 and for supporting and caring about all of our children in the schools across the state of Minnesota. I encourage the committee members to please support House File 984, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm available for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Rick Bile, did I get that right?
That is correct.
Okay. If you'd like to state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kyle Rickbile, and I'm the principal at St. Joseph's Catholic School in West St. Paul. Just a little bit about our school. Our students always struggle with their cardinal directions because West St. Paul is not, in fact, west of St. Paul, so they always mix up west and south and all of that. But thank you for the opportunity to speak today on behalf of my teachers, our parents, and students in support of House File 984. Our non-public schools rely on aid for textbooks and counseling services, busing, special education services, and nursing. And the aid in this bill would give the students access to services that they would not otherwise receive at our school. Funding is currently based on 7th and 8th graders in a school like ours, but our needs are not only for our 7th and 8th graders. This bill would better allow us to address the needs of the much larger population at our school, which is kindergarten through 6th grade. Now, I have seen school counselors do amazing things such as teach lessons on mental health, work with students who exhibit self-harm, form friendship groups to help young people solve their conflicts or who are struggling with bullying. It's very helpful support, and I know that it's expensive. And as you can also imagine, the needs of our students has increased in the last 5 years, and I've personally witnessed more incidences of self-harm, more family struggles, more expressed suicidal ideations, and more cases of anxiety during that time. And I would say among our greatest needs is that of anxiety, as we have more students than ever at all ages that avoid school due to anxiety, and our school counselor particularly helps them to get into our building and then get to class once they arrive to school. Our students have a greater need than ever. We want to be able to meet their needs for all of our students. This bill would have a tremendous impact on our school's ability to offer counseling for our students, and would go a long way to providing this help. So thank you again, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'll be available for questions if anyone needs them. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, I'll ask you two to be available in case we have questions. And Caitlin Schneider, if you'll come up. And then we have two remote testifiers. Caitlin Schneider from Education Minnesota. And then I do have two remote testifiers after that. And Ms. Schneider, if you'd state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder, representing Education Minnesota and 84,000 active and retired educators across the state. 90% of students in Minnesota attend public school. Education Minnesota opposes investment in private schools. Private schools choose who to include and who to exclude. They are not bound by the Americans with Disabilities Act. They do not follow the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. They do not measure student achievement via the MCAs. And the trade-off for these privileges should be an absence of state funding. I believe context is important in this conversation. Representative Clardy first authored this bill in 2023, the year the House DFL created the first aid stream for mental health in our schools, Student Support Personnel Aid. That aid stream is a $60 million investment in student mental health across the state so they can receive the mental health and physical health supports our students need. In contrast, this year, one of the first bills heard in this committee was House File 56, which would eliminate the mental health stream. Now, I want to be very precise in how I talk about this bill, because I've heard some legislators insist that that bill is not about defunding student mental health and social and emotional learning, which is a stated goal of groups like Moms for Liberty. I've been told House File 56 is just about flexibility. But to be clear, in a world in which House File 56 passed into law, if even a single dollar of that aid was used for something else.
And Ms. Schneider, if you could keep your comments to the bill, that would be great. I won't cut you off. I'll give you latitude, but let's keep it to the House file in front of us, please.
It is distasteful to cut funding for public school mental health and increase funding for private school mental health in the same breath. I believe Representative Clardy cares about the mental health of all students, and I believe private schools like Blake, which charge tuition as high as $40,000 a year, and yet bill Minneapolis Public Schools almost $200,000 for guidance services, do not need funding from the state. Fridley Public School spends $230,000 for guidance services to Holy Rosary Catholic School, which charges almost $20,000 in tuition. And St. Paul pays Shattuck St. Mary over $150,000 for guidance services, where the tuition can cost as much as $73,000. Please oppose House File 984. Non-public schools already receive more funding for counseling services than our public schools. We should be focused on our constitutional commitment to provide a general and uniform education to the 90% of students who attend public school. Sorry for the brain fits, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. We do have two remote testifiers, so hopefully we can get this to go together. Well, Dr. Michelle Kramer, Director of Schools, Diocese of New Ulm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the members of the committee. Good afternoon. I am the Director of Schools for the Diocese of New Ulm, and I'm here to represent those non-public schools and students who currently only receive school counseling services at the 7th through 12th grade level. And I ask you today to consider, is the mental health situation that we face today limited only to those kids in 7th through 12th grade, or are trauma and anxiety a part of all of our educational experiences, even to the young learners? In my experience, elementary students exhibit mental health needs, and this proposed bill would allow schools to provide early detection and potentially take proactive measures to begin eliminating some of the mental health situation that we face today. I really don't have time to go into all the reasons for this mental health crisis, but we could argue that there are two big causes at this point: the shift in culture that happened during the pandemic, which we've heard about before today, and the increased use of technology, which ironically was intended to increase socialization, but really has done the exact opposite. Our children and families have become more isolated and more depressed than ever before. So providing counseling services to elementary students could help them develop those essential skills for socialization. Use of the lunch bunch concept or friendship circles are key to providing these kinds of supports that aim to help teachers teach students social skills, as well as to bring down the bullying behavior. While teachers or school leaders in our non-publics can and have undertaken these tasks, providing resources by professional counselors with consistency and professionalized, specialized training would be greatly beneficial. Furthermore, providing one-on-one counseling for young children who have experienced trauma in their lives and providing a means for early detection may actually save us money in the long run. We know that experiences of trauma and anxiety or the need for one-on-one counseling is not limited just to high school students. In fact, undetected and untreated conditions are likely to be exacerbated in the high school years and beyond. Providing early detection and treatment, not to mention proactive training in social skills, will reduce ongoing problems and ultimately costs down the road. At this time, non-public pupils receive the supports needed to help our students with academic success, but often the barriers young people face to academic success have a lot more to do with self-regulation and social and psychological issues. These are best addressed by providing counseling services. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for your time and consideration of this bill. it really does have the potential to take steps to move us past the mental health situation we are currently facing. Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Kramer. Andrew Hilliker, and if you could hear us, if you can state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Andrew Hilliker. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I am the president at Stella Maris Academy in Duluth, Minnesota, and we are an early childhood through high school, Catholic school serving Northeast Minnesota. We have just under 700 students coming from about 7 school districts in the region. And I am here to advocate for expanding non-public pupil aid funding for mental health and guidance counseling services in non-public schools at the elementary grade level, because early intervention is the least in the least restrictive learning environment is the most effective. And there's two important messages I want to share today that I'd like the committee to hear today. And I do not want to be overly redundant to the other testifiers, so I will keep brief, but try to be concise. So the first message is, last week I had the privilege of meeting with one of our local state representatives to advocate for protecting non-public pupil aids. This fruitful conversation was enlightening, and it was helpful to me as I learned that we need to talk more about the diverse communities our independent schools are serving. This representative rightfully shared his perception that the affluent population in most families who choose Catholic education have the means to seek out all supports their children need externally. This perception, as I respectfully shared with the state representative, is false. The spectrum of families we serve at Stella Maris Academy is very wide and it's very deep. And we can speak specifically to socioeconomics. We certainly support many, many families who fall well below the threshold of poverty. We are called to serve and provide to any family that desires a Christian education. And I know this mission is true for many of my friends across the state and other independent faith-based schools. This is an important reality that independent school leaders need to share more about so that it's realized, and it provides context to my second message to the committee today. And that is, we are able to provide an exceptional education that saves the state of Minnesota an incredible amount of money to a wide variety of families and students. The level of support and need for students to be successful continues to increase. The why behind that offers great debate, philosophical discussion, and needed responses. But today, what I can tell you from lived experiences every day is that not having trained counselors in our elementary schools does a disservice to students. Just this week, our team has been working with a family who's been with us since the early childhood program for their children. This family has been dealt blow after blow after blow. The single parent in this home has been seeking out mental health support for their students. Unfortunately, the delay to receive these services from the providers within our community are weeks, if not months, out. If these students were just a few years older, an initial level of response would be available in their least restrictive learning environment here at Stella Maris, because they'd be in seventh grade, not fifth. The services and supports that would have the same cost should the family compromise what they desire and know is best for their family. If this family and the numerous others like them were to enroll at our local public school, our partners there would be stretched thinner and need the same funding we are advocating for today. Minnesota has made great strides in recognizing the importance of student mental health, but too many children in non-public schools are left without access to the critical support they need. Mental health challenges do not discriminate based on type of school a student attends. Anxiety, depression, trauma, stress, you name it, impacts in every educational setting. Yet many non-public schools lack the funding to provide professional counseling services. These students and families struggle to find affordable and quality accessible care elsewhere. So investing in these services is not just, it's not just about fairness, but it's also about strengthening our communities. When we support students completely and wholly, we reduce crisis situations, improve academic outcomes, see improved attendance, and foster a much healthier and more productive future for our state. I appreciate the hearing on this topic. It is important and it has real implications. And I do urge you to support legislation that expands these non-public pupil aids for elementary K-6 counseling services. And I'm happy to answer any questions. And I appreciate your time and the work you all do. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Hilliker. If you could stay on just in case there's a question directed your way. So members, with that, that concludes the public testimony as we have in front of us. We are an education finance committee, therefore we deal with finances. Just for clarification of the record, if nonpartisan staff could answer the question, what is the impact of House File 984? Does it cut funding for public education? Ms. Beckel?
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. This bill does not include a measure cutting funding. It would have a cost to the state. A fiscal note is pending.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Beckel, for that, and thanks for the clarification. Members, member questions, I have one so far. Representative Sensenmrera, you're first up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Cardi, for bringing this bill. You know, I think we should be ringing the alarm all we can on student mental health. I think I have two questions. One, I think it's just a clarification for nonpartisan. I heard some testimony that sounded like, you know, schools were saying we can't offer this kind of support to elementary school students. Is that the case, or is it just that the state is not providing funding right now? Is there any statute that is making it so that elementary school students going to non-public schools can't get counseling or mental health support services?
Who would like to take that one? Mr. Strom?
Chair Kreisha, Representative Sensenmrera, there's no prohibition. It's primarily a funding issue. There are, in both the public school setting and the non-public school setting, there are arrangements sometimes for counseling service that rely on private insurance or bill backs to third parties as well. In terms, as Ms. Beckel was saying, in terms of this bill, I think the last fiscal note was around $2 million a year, somewhere in that neighborhood of what the cost would be if 984 were enacted. That's based on the way that the non-public aid works. It's based on the average cost for the public school system for the same amount of services. But in terms of, there's no statutory prohibition that would prohibit a non-public school from providing counseling services. It's a revenue issue for the non-public schools.
Representative Sensenmrera.
And then I just have one additional question. So, you know, I think where I'm a little bit struggling with this bill is knowing that different private schools have different finances, and I think that was talked about from different testifiers, right? So, for example, I'll say that, you know, where I live, Minnehaha Academy is in my district. As I understand it, what I know of that school, you know, students that go there, you know, are probably from more well-off families than, say, you know, Cristo Rey, which is also very close to me, which I know takes, you know, very low-income students. I was just looking at their website. It seems like families pay maybe $3,000 a year for that compared to, I'm not sure how much they pay at Minnehaha Academy, but I think it's a lot more. So my question, and this might be, again, for nonpartisan, does the aid, is there anything in the aid that accounts for the finances of the school, or would a Minnehaha Academy get the same amount for this as a Cristo Rey?
Mr. Strom?
Chair Kreisha, Representative Sensenmrera, the aid is simply based on the number of non-public schools that request the students that request the aid. It doesn't reflect any demographic or income information about those students. It's simply a flat amount of aid. The counseling rate right now for secondary students is about $339 on average for public schools. And so for each non-public school that requests the aid from their district, that amount is provided to the district for the non-public aid. And this would mirror that system. So it's not based on the tuition charged or the income levels. It's simply the average per public school student provided for the number of non-publics within that district that apply.
Thank you.
Representative Sensenmrera, any more?
No problem.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Clardy. I kind of wanted to bounce back. I was a product of one of the pupils in a private school that received this or fought for this as a child with a chronic illness diagnosed. And so, you know, I just have a question as far as how are the funds monitored throughout the individual districts per pupil, because I don't see it competing from a public school stance if not each pupil are getting this this treatment or this service. So, you know, how is it monitored throughout the districts? Is it a public school giving, do you apply for it? And the public schools, the district is who's monitoring amongst the private schools. Is it a application that the private school has to apply for the pupil? I'm just trying to get a better understanding on that, because, you know, when you put when you pin us students, and I didn't come from a wealthy family, generational wealth to go to private school. I worked hard to get a scholarship in athletics and education, and my private school was a lot different in going to St. Agnes than my brother, who was at St. Paul Academy. You know, there's differences amongst privates and charter schools for these. So I guess my question is, how is this monitored? How is it distributed amongst the districts?
And so, Representative Perez Vega, your question is, how do they monitor in the process? Would you like that to go nonpartisan and then to Mr. Benz, or start with nonpartisan?
I like it
with nonpartisan. Okay, nonpartisan. Mr. Strom.
Chair Kreisha, Mr. Benz may be able to address this better on the monitoring and compliance portion, but in terms of the relationship with the school, the funding, the funding goes to the school district, and then the non-public school within that district reports their pupil count to that student. There's a, or to that school, and it's based on that eligible pupil count that's reported. There's a different process when you get into the textbooks areas, but in terms of the relationship there. But Mr. Benz is probably best to speak to how exactly the pupil count is confirmed and whether there's any follow-up monitoring on that pupil count or how that money is spent at the non-public school.
Mr. Benz, would you like to weigh in?
Mr. Chair. Representative Perez Vega, thank you again for offering the bill. In general, these are state programs, so a vast majority of these services are actually provided through the public school district and district employees. So there's checks and balances. In some cases, which we've seen over the last several years, the struggle to find more school counselors, et cetera, sometimes, as our testifier earlier is, they will maybe third-party contract with a actual entity to do that. But the contract sits with the local district, so there's always that check and balance on that as how that happens. So,
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you once again. I also want to give a special shout out to our West St. Paul principal, Kyle Rigbeck, for explaining the demographic and the borderlines within my district of what City of St. Paul and City of West St. Paul.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this bill. Fully support it, fully support kids, because that's what this is really about. This aid is used to pay for transportation, so getting kids to school. I don't know if you knew, but we have a bit of an attendance issue in Minnesota. Some of us have been focused on that. Representative Bernig is smiling at me.
Representative Bakeberg, would you like me just to acknowledge that you're leading on the attendance issue?
No, I would say that would be Representative Keeler.
And Representative Keeler, I'll call out both of your efforts, so thank you.
So it's providing special ed services to students. It is providing nursing to students. It's providing textbook. They are not religious textbooks. And the other thing is counseling, and our testifiers have done a fantastic job. I just want to highlight one faith-based school that is doing an amazing job that I've recently just learned about. And they really, and I want to highlight them because they counter the narrative that it's only the wealthy that are going to these faith-based institutions. So Hope Academy in Minneapolis serves an amazing community, and when you look at the data and the success of the same students that go to Hope Academy in comparison, the kids at Hope are thriving. And providing for the elementary age, the counseling, the textbooks, the nursing, transportation, it removes a barrier to help kids reach their potential. So Representative Clardy, fantastic bill, proud to support it, and am very proud to not support any cut to non-public pupil aid moving forward as well.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Clardy. I'm going to have to bend towards this, but so I can't see you, but good bill. And actually, I'm going to sign on to this. I don't know how I missed it, but I love it. I think it's excellent. And I appreciate hearing about what all schools are doing, whether it's public, non-public, charter, because offering those opportunities to families to educate their child in the way that works best for that child and that family is so important. So appreciate the work that our non-public schools do as well. Gives lots of educational opportunity. And I think having the services for counseling and mental health at the elementary level is incredibly important just in what we're seeing right now as kids in general. It doesn't really matter which school they're going to. These are issues that we're seeing pervasively throughout our state and nation, and we should address it. And the other issue is, as there are quite a few non-public schools that only go up to either sixth or eighth grade, and then those same students end up going to the public schools for the rest of their education. And I think it behooves us to prepare those children in all the different ways, mental health included, because you don't deal with it early, as we know, then it's an issue, a bigger issue later. So I appreciate this bill. I think it's a good bill. It's much needed. Mental health's huge for kids in general, and this hits a need that needs to be addressed. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Joaquim, and then I'll go to the bill author for the close.
Thank you, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. My apologies. Representative Green, I didn't see you jumped in.
Oh.
We have time. My apologies, Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a quick question about implementation. I think this might be for you, Representative Clardy. In with counselors, we know that we have like a 533-to-1 counselor rate in the public schools right now. So in private schools, I just looked it up, so the enrollment's just lower, right, on average in the state. Like, I think it says it's around 200. So how does this play out? Because I think one of the things we've learned from students is the counseling need is many times unpredictable when the services are needed. So how do you envision this working within a smaller school setting with, because there's language in here that talks about making sure that it's the ratio, which I appreciated, like the ratio can't be different. So just thought I would throw that out.
Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Chair Carisha. I am going to call a lifeline.
Mr. Betts.
So, yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green. The way it's calculated, as Mr. Strom indicated, is a per pupil allocation. Mm-hmm. And so in a lot of places, there may be a counselor that could be a part-time counselor in a district school and then be able to tack on a period of FTE to that as well. So it generates a certain amount based on the, so in a lot of our places that are non-publics, unless they're a larger school, an average size of a non-public school is 165 students.
Yeah.
And the median size is about 110. So for a lot of these, it's a part-time counselor, which for a lot of them is exactly what may need. It's never going to meet the need, as you clearly indicated. But the hope is that maybe this will also be able to generate additional interest in adding counselors in our districts and in that. So I think that's kind of how it works in a lot of these schools, where that counselor may be there a day or two a week, or maybe even a day a week. And I think about some of those situations that happen in schools of trauma, and they always, the one you always hear say, counselors are available. Unfortunately, for a lot of our schools, that's not possible, especially with the younger grades. And as Mr. Rickbile said, for his school, only their 7th and 8th grade kids generate services for just those 7th and 8th grade kids, and the rest of them do not have that opportunity. So.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Representative Altendorf, then Representative Joaquim, and to the close. So Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Clardy. This is an excellent bill, and we've been hearing, as stated, since COVID, the mental health crisis has certainly risen, and this is not discriminated on based on if you go to a private school or a public school. The mental health crisis is across the board there. In the testifiers, though, when we're looking at putting $2.2 billion towards our public schools in the last session, and this is a small price to pay, $2 million is what I heard was the estimate when it was last put on a fiscal note. This truly is a small, small drop in the bucket. And as one of the testifiers said, you know, our private schools are doing such a good job of educating our schools at a lower price and at oftentimes with much better results. And so it's wise for the state of Minnesota to be investing our dollars across the board to all the students. So strongly support this. I do thank you for your resilience to stay on this. And let's try to get this passed.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this forward and keeping it on the radar. I know your passion is to make sure that all of our students have mental health supports. And I think Representative Green kind of pointed out the tension when we have a counselor ratio at about 533 per student in our public schools, when even a half-time, if they have to leave that public school to go attend to a private school, it makes it tough. We do need more people in the pipeline. And, you know, we did start non-public pupil aid in about 1969 around transportation. And then in 1975, when they added counselors, it was for secondary because it was just academic. We weren't talking a lot about mental health in our schools in 1975. But things have changed, and our students do need support. And I think, like I said before, the tension really is when we have such a high student-to-counselor ratio, or low, how would you say that? We have not enough counselors for the students that we have currently. So spreading that pie or spreading that icing a little thinner makes it really tough. But thank you for bringing it forward to start the discussion. And we're going to have a lot of tough decisions to make after we see the budget numbers on Thursday.
And thank you, Chair Youakim. And so with that, Representative Clardy, in the realm of the art of possible, would you like to close on your bill?
I'm done. No.
well, we can talk about Love is Blind if you'd like.
No. Okay. As it's been said, a lot of our students fluctuate from public schools to private schools and back and forth. But a lot of our public schools are impacted at the 612 level when people stop going to the private schools and they join the public ranks for K-12. So with that being said, if we focus on kids, if we start with the kid and see what's best for them and then make our decisions, it makes it easier. I do know that we are looking for a forecast on Thursday. I do realize that. But let's keep the kids in the center.
And with that, Representative Clardy, the chair lays over House File 984 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill and further consideration at a later date. Thank you to all the testifiers, and thank you for the conversation. Members, we do have two technical correction bills, which will be vehicle bills for the committee later. I'm going to move and ask we pass those two through, one to taxes and one to the general register. Then we're going to go on to a robust discussion, hopefully around PSEO, and we have a couple of school administrators who'd like to talk about what it's like and what they're seeing. So with that, the chair moves House File 921. It's a technical corrections aid and levy adjustment that 921 be placed on the general register. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Congratulations, Chair. Your bill's on the way. House File 922 is another technical correction bill to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any discussion to that? And with that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. Good day for the Chair. So, members, thank you very much. Let's go ahead and in your folders, you have documents prepared by the nonpartisan staff and a document prepared by our guests to help facilitate the overview and discussion on dual enrollment programs. Some of you may be hearing from your local officials and schools about the concerns about PSEO. This overview and testimony is meant to help guide us as we look at those reforms and what might be needed going forward to best fit the educational choices that are out there. So with that, how are we going to start off? Who is it, Mr. Strom?
Chair Kreisha, members, Ms. Para and I have some documents in the folder for you. We thought perhaps what would be easiest is to start with a little overview of the of the funding and then talk a little about sort of the three organizational structures for PSEO-style programs. We hope to engage you all on questions that you may have on PSEO, but let's start maybe with just a little bit of background information for you. Additionally, the department puts out an annual report on called their Rigorous Course-Taking Report, and that's got a lot of very helpful information in it about all the different kinds of dual enrollment programs that exist.
And Mr. Strong? I'm just going to pause for 1 second. Just so everyone knows, these documents are available on the outside as well as the committee packets for the members. So thank you, Mr. Strong. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let's perhaps start with the single sheet first that's entitled PSEO Enrollment by School Type. PSEO first passed the legislature in 1985, and at that time, the initial setup, which is sometimes referred to as traditional PSEO, was for 11th or 12th grade students to leave their high school and attend at a post-secondary institution, often abbreviated as a PSI, and take their coursework there. These courses were called dual enrollment because the student earned secondary credit as well as post-secondary credit for the courses. This is the type of program you most often hear about in regard to questions or concerns related to PSEO. On the single sheet that shows enrollment, you can see from fiscal year 2008 forward to 2022, which is the last year we currently have data for, the number of students that have participated in the traditional PSEO program. This program is available to non-public students, to homeschool students, and to public school students, and you can see those are the first three columns on this single page. About 1,450 non-public students in 2022 enrolled in higher ed institutions under traditional PSEO. About 1,780 homeschool students did so, and just under 8,000 public school students, charter and district, enrolled in traditional PSEO. That made a total of 11,000 students in the pupil count. And they took a total of 172,000 credits, so they were averaging 15.43 credits per pupil. And the cost paid directly under traditional PSEO to the post-secondary institutions for the last year that's on this sheet, fiscal 22, was $38.3 million. So that's the first of three PSEO programs we'll talk about. And there's a second sheet to complement this sheet, and that's the single sheet on two sides labeled direct PSEO aid payments to post-secondary institutions. And you can see on that sheet we've got data through fiscal year 24, and you can see in the last year that just finished, last school year, the 23-24 school year, the state paid $48.6 million in PSEO funding directly to the higher ed institutions in Minnesota. And the printout in front of you is on two sides, and it's sorted from the largest payment down from the state. So you can see at the top there, University of Northwestern, followed by Anoka-Ramsey Community College, were the two largest recipients of state aid for traditional PSEO programs. And so, Mr. Chair, that's the first of three programs that's called traditional PSEO when we talk about enrollment options programs.
Very well.
If you turn to the portion excerpted from the school finance guidebook, there's four pages there. It's labeled PSEO programs, finance, and classification. The second variation on a theme is called courses according to agreement. And this is something that's become more popular over the last several years. Under this arrangement, instead of using the statutory way the funds are transferred between the high school and the colleges, the high school and the college enter into an agreement, a course according to agreement, and they iron out at that level between the individual post-secondary institution and the individual district what the payment will be. And the reason districts often choose this model is it maximizes the funding. There's less funding in total if a student is funded through the traditional PSEO model. We don't have good data yet on courses according to agreement. In the next rigorous course reports from MDE, we should be getting additional data on courses according to agreement. So we'll have some sense then of the number of districts that are choosing this approach. But this approach essentially is a contract arrangement between the school district and the higher education institution. And then the third popular kind of dual enrollment PSEO style program is called concurrent enrollment. And these programs often have the name of the sponsoring institution as what it's described in the school. Sometimes names like college and the schools, or there are other kinds of names like that that different colleges use for these programs. Under the concurrent enrollment model, the high school itself offers the course. The course is taught by a high school teacher, usually, who's working under the guidance and having been trained by a higher education teacher and presenting coursework that meets the higher education's systems requirements. But that course, the concurrent enrollment course, then involves no funding transfer other than the concurrent enrollment payment that the school district makes with the higher education institution. And there's a state aid that accompanies this that totals about $4 million a year that pays a portion of this cost. But essentially, under the courses for concurrent enrollment, the high school teacher is the one delivering the course. The course is still counting for post-secondary credit. It's being taught under the approval and oversight of the higher education institution, but it's offered at the high school. In this document, each of those three areas has a little list of the student eligibility, the qualifying PSEIs, the course instructors, the funding, and then program participation information. Ms. Pera has an excellent document that's in your packet as well that describes dual enrollment programs. And if you'd like, we could talk about that some, or maybe it'd be best at this point to just have members ask their PSEO questions and we could try and address those as they come up.
I'm sorry, you're waiting for me and I'm over here just talking.
Mr. Chair, if you like, it may be most productive for the committee if they have specific questions on issues they're hearing within their district, either from their higher ed institutions or their high schools about PSEO, and we may be able to address those. That may be the most efficient use of the time here, if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Stroman. I'm sorry, I was waiting for Ms. Perry. Did you want to jump in? You had referenced her document, so I want to make sure. Okay. With that, members, we can start. If you have questions, this is really just going to be a roundtable discussion. I would like to invite Superintendent from Pequot, Kurt Snump, and Principal from Pequot, Aaron Nelson, and Representative Knudsen, if you would like to do a quick introduction. I believe these are folks that you're familiar with.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. This is the superintendent and the high school principal from the school, not that's in my district, but that my children attend. And I'm very thankful that they're here today. They have had some issues with PSEO, specifically funding and some other issues. So I think that they want to share a little bit about that and possibly some solutions and how we can fix this to make this work better for everybody. So
thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Knudsen. I've been hearing from folks all across the state, doesn't matter which district. And so Representative Knudsen has stepped up on this a little bit. And, of course, she has a couple of folks from her district that are also very concerned and want to talk about it. So with that, Mr. Stump, state your name for the record and go ahead and begin with your testimony. And then we'll go to you, Mr. Nelson. So, Mr. Stump, Superintendent Stump.
Chair Kreisha, Representative Knudsen, great to see you as well. Thank you for having us. Kurt Stump, Superintendent Pequot Lakes. And I know we're probably a little pressed for time, so I think our principal,
Mr. Stump, we have 45 minutes, so.
Mr. Nelson is going to
that may be pressed
part.
Up for time for you, but we're good.
But speaking of that, I think in full disclosure of this committee, you were my junior high track coach and cross country coach and teacher, so we should put that out on the table, I feel like, from the beginning.
And as I've said, you were always way more talented than your brother Brian, so welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Nelson to walk you through the first part of our document. But before I do, we're sitting here on behalf of an outstanding community. The Pequot Lakes teachers, staff, and community have led us to this point. And Mr. Nelson has been a leader throughout the state on this topic, doing a lot of research, talking to post-secondary institutions, other high school principals, and administrators, including superintendents, to try to get a handle on all the nuances with PSCO. So with that, I will let you turn it over to Mr. Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Nelson, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Chair Krisha, members of the committee, Aaron Nelson, high school principal, Pequot Lakes. Very kind words from my superintendent. I'll be working on the pay raise later. But I definitely appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about our perspective and indicate to you that this is a common experience for numerous principals throughout the state. We currently have courses. If you look in your packet, there should be a local perspectives document that was shared with you, and that's what I'm going to be referencing a little bit as I work through my portion. We have courses according to
and
agreement.
Mr. Nelson, if you could wait 1 second, we'll let everybody find the document. So
sure.
Local perspectives document. Okay, Mr. Nelson.
All right, Chair. Yep, that's correct. Mm-hmm. I believe it's titled Post-Secondary Enrollment Options and Concurrent Enrollment. Yeah, so it's a little different. But so we have options 2 and 3 that you heard from the Nonpartisan Research Committee, courses according to agreement and concurrent enrollment. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about what it's like for our building and our students at Pequot Lake Schools. So we have seen a very dramatic increase in students participating in what we would traditionally call PSEO, which is courses according to agreement. These are courses in which our students select directly through the colleges and universities, bypassing sort of the high school enrollment process and taking them directly from colleges. We have courses according to agreement with a local two-year college, and our students were well aware of their options and their reasons for taking it. And I just want to share a little bit of why we've seen such an increase, and then say that how that's experienced statewide. Flexibility is ruling the day for students. They don't want to, you've heard about attendance, they don't want to be in school all day, every day. And where they can, they choose flexibility. And online options have given students that flexibility. So they've basically looked at how can I get college credits? More importantly, how do I get them in a very flexible way? And so we've seen a dramatic increase in a demand for online options. In the, just look at the fall of 2024, at Pequot Lake Schools, we are very fortunate that our school board had the insight a few years ago to invest in college credit options through what we call CIS, which is concurrent enrollment, where our high school teachers have the credits that necessary in order to teach those classes through a local institution that accredits that. It's the same course and the same credit issued to the students. And we have 123 credits that we offer through our high school, which is a very, very large number, and we're very fortunate for that. Last fall, we had 174 students participate in what we call college in the schools. That's 1,458 credits that they earned, and an average cost of $30.86 per credit. Total cost was $45,000. During that same time period, we had 49 students choose PSEO. 8 of them were full-time, 41 were part-time. At $261 per credit for the same credits, that's a cost of $111,000. 174 students for $45,000, 41 students for $111,000. As you can tell quickly that those numbers are not cost effective. So really what I want to just talk a little bit about is what are the challenges we face with PSEO, one of those being financial, obviously. We are experiencing at the high school level, we're experiencing this marketplace for low rigor. So students are communicating with themselves, amongst themselves, and they are finding courses that offer the lowest rigor for the same amount of credit. And that PSEO is essentially allowing them to make those choices, bypassing any guardrails that we may have in place around student achievement or college readiness. We don't get to set the entrance exam. That's come from their entrance standards, that comes from the colleges. We've seen a lowering of those standards. We've seen the colleges sort of finding this to be a way in which to increase enrollment through the public schools. Accountability is also a concern. So students who are not college ready that don't perform well in PSEO courses, when they don't perform well, we do not know because they're not our students. So we're not allowed to know current student progress. It is very common for us to have students that fail. We've had circumstances in which students have not been able to graduate on time and parents were not informed because their kids didn't tell them they were failing a required course for graduation. Last fall, 2024, we had five students that failed a course at a cost of $4,000. Again, we were not able to intervene on behalf of those students until the very end when those grades were reported back to the high school. One of the concerns that we have is that sometimes those early interventions that we could offer students can help a student perform better, or sometimes we just need to help them get themselves out of a course and because it becomes a permanent college record and something that we don't want to tarnish for small mistakes that are made in high school. Student mobility and unpredictability with PSEO, one of the things that we do experience is in this time right now in March, the spring of each year, we establish our staffing for the following year. There's been an introduction of a new deadline, October 30th deadline for declaring PSEO for spring semester. So we establish our budgets and staffing a year in advance, and when that new deadline was put in place, it put additional pressures on schools to allow students an opportunity to make enrollment changes that we would have already staffed for, but we can't adjust our staffing. A number of my colleagues have expressed the fact that they've had sections of their classes cut when students left and went PSEO, and they had already established a concurrent enrollment course in that place and had to cut it and assign that teacher to other duties. Just want to talk real also a little bit about concurrent enrollment. You've heard a little bit about that's the option three that was discussed earlier. The Higher Learning Commission requires teachers have a master's degree plus 18 credits. And some schools like Pequot Lakes have invested in their teachers to send them back to school, either pay for those credits or give them lane changes accordingly. And so there's been some incentives. There's also been incentives by the legislature, the MN18 program through Lakes Country Co-op and Moorhead State incentivized opportunities for teachers to earn those credits, and definitely we appreciate that. One of the challenges that high schools face in trying to grow concurrent enrollment, as I had stated earlier, concurrent enrollment is a much more efficient way of getting students the college options. PSEO has its place. I believe that the concurrent enrollment certainly could service a majority of our students. One of the challenges has been encouraging teachers to go back and get those master's plus 18. A second challenge is they need a master's plus 18 in all the content areas they teach. So, for example, I have a social studies teacher. Under the Minnesota licensure requirements for Pelsby, they can teach any subject in social studies, but under concurrent enrollment, they're limited to American government. And so he can't teach econ, he can't teach history, he can't teach those other ones. He needs 18 credits in all those areas. And of course, you can tell that's quite limiting. One of the things I'll talk about a little bit later after Mr. Stumpf has an opportunity to share with you some of the suggestions that we might have is as schools, we're certainly talking to each other and ways in which we can continue to offer the lower cost version of college opportunity through concurrent enrollment. And we are exploring ways in which as high schools, we can collaborate or coordinate and offer some college credit options online through our schools at a reduced cost as compared to PSEO. And so that was what it's called a consortium of course offerings. And I can talk a little bit about that later.
Did you want me to go back to Mr. Stump?
Please.
Mr. Stump.
Chair Kreisha, so the next couple pages do offer some suggestions or opportunities possibly to change some legislation. I do want to highlight the three points at the bottom of the first page saying the four proposals that are on the next two pages Seems like a win. Doesn't limit the amount of credit students can receive in PSEO, college in the schools, or concurrent enrollment. I think neither myself nor Mr. Nelson, I hate to speak for other people, but I'd say for at least for us two, we're not looking to limit students' abilities or choices to take the classes that they want. So that's number one. Number two, does not add cost. And number three, increases school district funding. So you're like, what is the win for all of those? So if you flip over to page two, and I'll present page two, again, not reading every bullet on the sheet, but give you some highlights. The first one, as was mentioned before, there's two different ways to pay for classes, whether we have a direct agreement with a post-secondary institution or we claim some part of that student if they're taking some high school classes and the post-secondary institution claims the other part of that student and gets directly reimbursed through MDE. So one proposal would be just to say, let's simplify things because I think the better we can do that, the more efficient we're going to be. So let's have one uniform process where the school districts claim every student as a 1.0, and then we set the amount for, in number one, $125 a credit for PSEO or $25 a credit for concurrent enrollment, and have one standard payment that is uniform across all school districts and post-secondary institutions. And then number three under payments is changing the drop period. Right now the drop period starts when post-secondary institutions start. So in fall semester, maybe mid-August. And yet we may not have access to our students at the high school level until the first week of September or later. So there's definitely a hiccup in that and extending that to ensure that we can have our counselors check in with students to make sure that their classes on their schedule reflect what they want before the drop period would be helpful.
And Superintendent Stump, if you could pause on that for 1 second. Do you have students that enroll in a class and then drop the class? And what happens with the funding in that case if it's after the college drop date?
We do. Chair Kreisha, I'll turn this over to Mr. Nelson to take the first crack at this.
Chair Kreisha, so we do have students that enroll in PSEO courses if they drop before the drop deadline, which is typically a 10-day drop deadline, which is essentially the first week of school. Then we do not have to, then we enroll those in our courses, and they are not considered to be enrolled in that PSEO course. After that timeline, that funding is lost. So that funding stays with the college. It's not recalled at that point in time.
And so with that, Principal Nelson, if that happens, the student, do they generally end up back in the school, or are they just, I mean, they're going somewhere, right?
Chair Kreisha, yeah, that's correct. The student, when they drop the course through the college, we have to figure out what to do with them at that point in time. Again, the funding stays with the college. We figure out how to enroll them in a high school option.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Stump. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Stump?
Chair Kreisha, I will add one more nuance to that, which has happened to Pequot Lakes, where we claim the student. So we have a contract with the college. They're with us through September 15th after the drop deadline. And then that kid transfers, or that student transfers to a school district. And then we have the bill for all of their credits that semester. And full disclosure, lucky enough, the school district that they transferred to was willing to reimburse us because they were going to claim that student as 1.0, but there was no obligation for that school district to do that. So there are some nuances within
it. And so if I appreciate that. And so look, I just want to investigate this a little bit because, I mean, at surface value, at surface level, right, you could say, oh, these kids are just willy-nilly doing this, and then they decide to drop, and they're, you know, whatever. But if I back this up and I go through the kids that I've had and worked through the high school, even my own kids, I mean, if they're making their decision way back in October or earlier, and then, you know, like, for example, they hit into the school district, and suddenly the stresses of competing for all the scholarships, trying to get in, so suddenly the stresses, so it may not be that they're just like, oh, I'm just not going to do this. It could be, oh my gosh, I don't need this right now, and backing off. How would you position that? I mean, I guess my point is we're asking kids to make a decision without really understanding what's coming down, and suddenly when they realize the stress, I mean, if we take this kid to college, I've had, you know, I was overzealous, yeah, I'll take six classes. And then I went, nah, that was a really bad idea. How do you see that playing out with your students and in your school, Mr. Nelson?
Chair Krisha, so that you've described it really accurately what is more typical. We see students who are overly eager. Their eyes are bigger than their stomach. And then as the reality sets in, especially with PSEO, because those are typically, or they are all off campus, the access to the professors, the familiar face-to-face conversations that they've had with teachers in the past, they don't have that. So they struggle a lot of times with that communication. When we have concurrent enrollment, so the college credits taught by our teachers in the school, we have much greater flexibility. We know the access, we have access to student grades and progress. We have constant communications with the students. And so we have options available to us to say, okay, well, this isn't going well. How about if we change you from a college credit option into a high school option? Again, at $30.86 a credit, it's an easier pill to swallow than if it were to be $800 bill for a single course. And so we definitely have a lot more flexibility through concurrent enrollment options than we do with a PSEO by contract.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Stump.
The last advocacy point on page 2 would just be to address the duplicate course. So if we're offering the course as Pequot Lakes High School for concurrent enrollment, and the student chooses to take that same course at a post-secondary institution, we would advocate for, great, go take it, but that's not a bill that needs to go back on the school district. That is a choice that student can make. But again, we have outstanding teachers in Pequot Lakes, and we're fortunate to, and then hopefully we encourage our families to access the high school experience and our high school teachers. And with that, I'll turn it over back to you for page 3 and Mr. Nelson.
Okay, so are you turning it back over to the committee, or do you have more to cover? Nelson?
Yeah.
Mr. Nelson, go ahead.
Chair Krisha, so one of the things that is a little bit of a challenge is growing concurrent enrollment options in schools. So I talked earlier about teacher certification, and the second thing is some districts have been hesitant to invest in teacher credentialing because there is no guarantee that the students will take the college and the school's option or the concurrent enrollment option because they always have access to PSEO. And so some districts have hesitated expanding their concurrent enrollment options because there's no guarantee that like the Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. There's no guarantee the kids are going to take that class. So one of the things on page 3 that we are proposing as a solution is there is currently a concurrent enrollment grant program that the legislature has already funded. And we're advocating for some change in some of that language as a way to encourage high school consortiums. So online courses taught by concurrent enrollment qualified instructors at high school. High schools could pool together their course options and provide the equivalent credit availability that students seek through PSEO. It's online, it's flexible, and there's a wide variety of courses available to them, and we can do it at a much lower cost to the state. So we've got some language in there about what that consortium would look like. This is a way to use some of our local or the regional education co-ops as a way to help to organize this. If this grant program were to be rewritten slightly in direct funding directly to secondary institutions, then we would have access to these funds to be able to establish some of these co-ops throughout the state. And then I guess the final thing I'll make a mention to is I would advocate for the removal of the October 30th deadline. I believe it's 30th and not 31st. I apologize for the error in there. But one of the things that has created is created an increased instability for schools with staffing and funding because of the late addition. That's all I have.
And with that, does that conclude your report? I mean, we're going to have some conversation, but that's very good. Thank you, Superintendent Stump. Thank you, Principal Nelson. So one quick question, and I'm sure we'll have lots of them. So this question is no intention at all. I'm just asking it because we're there, but I heard a couple things. If some of the changes could be done, or if we could find a way, if I ask this correctly, would that help you with teacher retention and recruitment at higher pay? What I'm wondering is, I think what I heard in there, a glimmer of, is if you continue to allow your teachers to develop, move up in lane changes, and, you know, that could be ways to solve some of that, whereas I'm not saying this is entirely doing that, but would that help? Is there something there that I'm picking up on, or did I miss something?
Chair Kreisha, so I would say that's accurate. One of the things that we have done a good job in our district of incentivizing teachers to earn these credits. And I think that if there was a little more stability around the concurrent enrollment portion and some barriers, or I shouldn't say the word barrier, that's a bad word to use. If some guidelines were put in place around PSEO that would give assurances to districts that if they invest in the concurrent enrollment, I definitely think that's an advantage to teachers. And certainly for districts in attracting families that are moving there, this is one of the things I hear often is families are looking for what are the elective options, what are the college credit options that your district has, and it encourages districts to invest in that part of it.
So very good. So my follow-up would be, I by no means would want to set up a competition situation or reduce flexibility for the students. But at the same time, if one of the unintended consequences is we're not allowing the rigor to stay up where it need to be and we're not allowed to train the teachers that are in the high schools and allow them to really go up, I see that as a disadvantage and not a good trade-off to the flexibility. So interesting. So with that, members, I have a couple folks for questions. And we have 20 minutes. I think this is a great conversation to keep us moving forward. Hopefully we'll see a bill or we'll see a group of folks that want to work on this. So Representative Quam, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will probably be for Mr. Nelson. I've noticed you can't always guess if a student is going to be successful in PSEO. You've got students that are excellent in high school, but when they take at the college, they have problems, and others that are, you know, above average, but they excel in the PSEO. Now, your concurrent courses, are they taught as a college style, or are they more of a high school style course?
Principal Nelson?
Thank you, Chair. Representative Quam, I appreciate that question. So our concurrent enrollment courses are a hybrid option. So they are essentially designed to be more like a college. We definitely give our students at Pequot Lakes, I know that a number of other districts are looking at options like this too, we give them a little more flexibility with attendance requirements, and yet we give the support. So they're there every day. They're in the building. They have access to those teachers, which is more of a high school perspective. And so we had 8 students last semester that were full-time PSEO, and for them, the high school just wasn't the right environment. I totally support that, totally support their choices and the reasons that they did the full-time. But when students are in the building, that concurrent enrollment option is designed to be supportive, to explore the college opportunities, and if it isn't working for any student, we have options to be able to adjust that.
Representative Quam, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I was at IBM, we had a corporate program for students that were from communities that had high dropout when they went to college. And during the summer between their senior year and the start of college, we had multiple things. One of the things, I was teaching a college-style math course so they could understand the difference between the relationships in college in high school, and I think it helped out quite a bit. But my thought is, would it be preferable to, if you're going to do PSEO, to take a concurrent course to sort of see a little bit of that difference and if it's a style that they're ready for?
And Representative Quam, was there a question there, or was that just finalized a comment?
No, it was a question because in teaching the students, if you're used to the high school style to the college, there's a difference. And by having a possibility of where they do a concurrent course before going PSEO, they will be better prepared or better understand if they're ready to do that. So I was wondering if that kind of philosophy in legislation might be a good thing to look at.
Superintendent Stump or Principal Nelson, which one would like to take that?
Chair Kreisha, thank you. Thank you, Representative, for your question. I would say that I would concur. We offer a number of the same courses that are offered through PSEO, and we always encourage our students to take the concurrent enrollment option to get that college experience. There are students who are on very specific tracks. They're very ambitious, and they have, since ninth grade, some of them, they're just wonderful kids. They've got a vision for what they want to do. And for some of them, their vision is very specific, and the area of focus is very specific, and might be in an area where we don't offer concurrent enrollment option. So we encourage them, hey, your junior year, take these concurrent enrollment options, and that senior year would be a great opportunity if you do that PSEO courses that we just can't offer. So that is one of the things that we do to encourage kids to, for that stepping stone into that college experience.
Very good. Representative Sensenmuir, you're up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to Representative Knudsen and the testifiers for bringing this issue. And I agree with you. I'm very big supporter of concurrent enrollment options. I did college in the schools when I was in high school, was able to then graduate college early. For me, it was the right option to be able to take a rigorous course, but also not have to get transportation to go to a different place, be able to stay in the high school environment, which is what I wanted. So I think that, you know, breaking down some of the barriers for districts to be able to offer concurrent enrollment, really, really agree with that. And if folks on this committee are working on that, would love to partner with that. You know, this is interesting because I've heard a set of kind of complaints or things about PSEO in my district that are different than what I'm hearing from you. So, like, what I've heard about is, you know, I hear a lot from students about kind of some of the barriers to taking PSEO in terms of, you know, not they have to provide their own transportation or, you know, we don't give funding for that. I've heard from students about, you know, they don't always get good information from their schools about PSEO options. But I have not heard about some of these things in terms of, like, academic standards or kind of rigor. And so, and I was, you know, speaking a little bit with a representative from my district who said that, you know, that we have not been hearing as much about that in the district I represent, Minneapolis. So I'm wondering, like, could there be some correlation between maybe the institutions that students are attending from a certain district and the rigor? So I'm wondering if you all could just maybe speak. I don't know if you have the data, but, like, are the students of your district, are they attending a certain college for PSEO, or is it really all over the place?
Superintendent Stump or Principal Nelson, whichever would like to take it.
Sure. Chair Kreisha, thank you. Representative, appreciate that question. So in our experience, one of the things that we see is the conflict between the concurrent enrollment. So the teacher, I'm going to give you the best example that I hear most commonly, composition. So composition one and two. And the composition course offered at the high school is very challenging, but if I take it through the college, I can write less papers and there's less rigorous requirements around those writings. Now we happen to believe that, I happen to support my teacher, that this is a very important course if you're headed towards college to be a proficient writer. So I support her high standards. I've heard from a number of districts that this is a classic course, for example, where we see this difference in rigor. And students are not required at Pequot Lakes to attend the school in which we have an agreement with. They can attend any school. And so what has happened is we have some students that find where is that lowest rigor course, the lowest requirements to get the same credit, and then they begin to share that information. So we see that trend sort of growing. I have some colleagues in the Duluth area who have expressed that very similar sentiment with students, and it's a common experience around the state for a lot of principals.
Representative Sensenmuir.
Yeah, thank you. And then just to kind of follow up, are your students, and I think you kind of answered this, but are they mainly attending one school or is it really all over for PSEO?
Superintendent Stump or Principal Nelson?
Chair Kunish, thank you. That is most commonly the students attend the school that we have the arrangement with. That is the most common. So 95 to 98% of the students attend that school.
Superintendent Stump?
Chair Kreisha, I will add a couple points. There is a mechanism in state statute where we pay for students' transportation if they meet a threshold for income. So we have had students in Pequot Lakes qualify for that threshold, which we do pay for transportation. And then just a follow-up, if you don't mind, to your question, Kreisha, on if some of these changes would help teacher retention. And in my opinion, absolutely, they would. I know Mr. Nelson doesn't like to brag about himself, but I will. He negotiated some different courses with a college in December. Our counselors and Mr. Nelson met with every student who was taking a PSEO class, and he was able within 3 weeks to drop our PSEO bill like $60,000. because he made our students and families more aware of the opportunities, which you can imagine what that does for teachers within our building and the ability to continue our staffing with high quality teachers.
Excellent. Representative Sensenmiller.
Yeah, thank you. I think just, you know, a comment. I don't know if there's something we could do in this committee around if we do know that there's an institution that is not providing rigor, like, not saying there's a blacklist or something, but like being able to share that information. Cause I will say, like, you know, students in Minneapolis largely attend for PSEO, University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I hear positive things and, you know, it's a public institution. So I wonder if there's a way to maybe, highlight and make sure that we're giving the dollars to the institutions that are actually providing that rigor, especially if they are public institutions over, you know, I'm kind of surprised by, I guess, some of the private institutions that we're providing a lot of state funding to. So thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Sensenmiller, I was thinking about that as, one of the things with all the communication that these students have, if there was some way to come up with a report or a rating system or some way that they could not only talk about the courses, but which ones have been the most beneficial in that. And I don't know the answer to that, but that's an intriguing line to think about there. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have two questions, but I'll ask them one at a time if that's okay. First one, just thinking about accountability and the students, when students drop out of a class, especially after the deadline, so then the schools are on the hook to pay that money to the college and it's lost money. And I know you've got some solutions in your area, but I'm just wondering if there's any accountability on the student's end or if that's not needed because it's just set up wrong in the first place and puts them in a bad spot. But kind of any skin in the game if a student drops out late like that. Now, if this was something they were actually in college, of college age, their family's paying for it, they're probably going to think twice about when they're going to drop out so they don't incur those costs. But when the state pays for it or our schools, there's no really consequences or accountability. And I don't want to affect students, too, that don't have the ability to pay or their families, but at the same time, it's human nature. So do you have any thoughts on, you know, if should there be some kind of penalty, like, well, for the rest of this year, can't take PSEO or those courses, or a percentage of the cost is paid by the family, which could be a hardship. But I'm just throwing this out because I think accountability is important and I don't like to see it abused. So is it the system that's the problem? Is it an accountability problem or both? I guess I'll throw that out to you.
To the testifiers.
You want to start? You want me to?
Sure, I can start. Chair, Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Representative, for that question. I would say that for a lot of students, this idea that I can save 2 years of college by doing it in high school has been a little bit of a infection. So they grab a hold of this idea. So we have a number of students at Pequot Lakes that's become a little bit of an epidemic of we're going to get our AA degree before we graduate. And it's a sign of prestige of look what I can do. I'm working and I'm excelling. In some cases, that certainly is a good thing. However, for some students, the pressures as they're putting themselves isn't healthy. The challenge of trying to get the AA degree with the idea it's going to save them 2 years of a college is also not accurate. That's not consistent to be the case. And then certainly as students have started on that journey, they've bitten off more than they could chew. And what we try to do with our students is we try to advise them consistently, like, okay, here's what you've currently done, or here's what you have done, here's what we recommend that you do. And through concurrent enrollment, we can pretty much help them to navigate that pretty closely, but we can't with the PSEO. So to your point, other districts have certainly suggested what would be good solutions or guards against that. There has been some suggestions that you've given great ideas. I don't have specifics to tell you that this is what works. What I can tell you is it takes a lot of counseling time from our counselors academically to sit down with those students and advise them and advise them again. And some students, against our advice, go ahead and take those classes. So the extending the timeline to drop would help. I think if there were some curbs put in place that would affect future ability for maybe the next semester, or maybe there's a, like you say, they pay for a portion of that cost if it's a withdrawal. It would certainly help us to have kids take a little more ownership into their course selection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you. Yeah, that's good. And these are all things that we should explore with the student in mind, obviously, to help them be successful in whichever pathway they choose. So my second question kind of follows up. Representative Sensenmura, you asked a very similar question that I had about the rigor, but I'm going to just kind of piggyback off of that. So it does sound like there are different expectations between PSCO courses, say these online courses in composition or whatever, like you were saying, and then your high school version of, is it concurrent enrollment? Is that what that's called then?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. So to piggyback, so I'm understanding that there seems to be differing expectations according to maybe where the student is taking their class. But are the expectations, these differing expectations happening because your instructor is choosing a rigorous course as it should be and maybe higher than what the college is offering? Or is it something in the system that's making you have to be more rigorous, but if they take it at the college, it's not? And I don't even know if I'm asking that correctly, but hopefully.
To the test fires.
Thank you, Chair. That is actually a really good question. And so I'm going to tell you that it's a matter of perspective in some cases. The only way for us to offer a college credit course is that our instructor applies to that college, the college approves that instructor, and then the college assigns a faculty advisor that supervises that instructor's work. So I can't speak to the rigorous requirements to say that that is the exact same course. What I can tell you is sometimes it is purely the enthusiasm and energy of my teacher saying that we're going to do this a little bit better because we meet for a longer period of time and we meet more days, we're going to do a little bit more. So that is sometimes the case. We have had opportunity in working with the college faculty advisor in which it's been made aware to us that our standard at the high school is higher than what they're required to do at the college level. And I can't tell you if that's a matter of a systemic issue or if that's how the faculty advisor is pushing the expectation. We're given a syllabus. We're told we have to teach to that syllabus. It's exactly what we do. I do not know the liberty by which colleges allow their professors to vary from the syllabus. We stick to what's required.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And members, we're down to 7 minutes. I mean, we're still fine, but on the list, I'll go Representative Vernig, Chair Joachim, and then I do have Lee and Lawrence. If you'd like Representative Lee to jump up, I can. You guys decide, but if I have time. So Representative Vernig, Lee, then Joachim, and Lawrence is what we're going to try to do before we close. Representative Vernig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. I really appreciate it. I went to a high school, Centennial, in Representative Ingen's district, where we had PSEO, concurrent enrollment, and VOTEC. I would not have gone on to college had it not been for the concurrent enrollment teacher saying, hey, you can do this. I have two, like Representative Sensenmura heard about the advertising, not advertising as an option, but pushing AP coursework because of the cost. I just want to thank you very much for coming, not just to say, hey, this is a problem, but bringing potential solutions, and I really appreciate that. The question I have is actually for Mr. Strom and or our House Research. Could you, by chance, get us the list of the direct admissions schools, the schools that have, you know what I'm asking for?
Yeah.
Yes. And so if I could just jump in, you're nodding yes, so if you can get them that,
Mr.
Great.
Chair, we'll send that to you for the committee and Representative Vernick.
Very good. Does that work, Representative Vernon?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Representative Chair Joachim, then Lee? Or do you want me to go Representative Lee, then Chair Joachim? Representative Lee, if you can. I have Lawrence at the end. I'm sorry. I'm going by who's on the list.
Closing it out. Okay.
Thank you.
I get bumped if we're on the time.
You didn't hit the buzzer quick enough. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I also went to a high school that had PSEO options, and so just curious, and I don't know if it's a better question for Mr. Strom or the testifiers, but, you know, this is also an issue that we talked about last year in education policy. So curious if when a student drops a PSEO course after the drop deadline, does that still show up on their high school transcript?
Mr. Sherm.
Mr. Chair, probably best for the testifiers to address this.
Chair Kreisha, Representative Lee, I can start to answer that question. I think that goes to Representative Bennett's question as well. That is one of the punitive things that some districts, I don't believe we have in Pequot Lakes, but that is one of the things that people are saying, well, the downfall of dropping is now you are going to have an F on your report card, not a drop. And I think we can debate, you know, whether that's good for kids or not good for kids, but the idea that we've raised the stakes and put so much money on PSEO, I think districts are saying we've got to find ways to curb it as best we can, and that's one of the ways. So, again, I think that speaks to Chair Bennett's question. What can we do? Colleges under the agreement aren't, in our experience, have not been overly enthusiastic about trying to say, if this kid drops on this date, we'll refund you. They just want a system in place, and one drop dead, here's your bill, and we move on. So that is one solution to say there has to be some agreement and to lower those stakes and the cost. So our kids, because they want to try things, and that's what we're there for. We're there to give them experiences, and if they fail, that's great. We'll help them back up, and yet we've raised the stakes so high for school districts and for kids.
Very good. Very quickly, I got it.
Very quickly. Yeah, I just say, I mean, at my high school, PSEO was advertised as only for gifted kids, right? And so if we are, you know, not wanting to impose a financial burden, you know, there are other ways to put skin in the game to make sure there is some accountability, right? Because this drop maybe doesn't show up on a college transcript, but maybe it should in high school. So thanks.
Very good. Representative Lawrence, if you're quick, and then I'm going to let Chair Youakim close us out.
Chair Kreisha, thank you very much. I will be brief, and I want to go to a totally different subject. When you talked about your payment language to the testifiers on lines 1 and 2, is it your intent or your request that the state set the value of a college credit based on what you're suggesting here with the numbers you proposed? Whether those are the exact numbers, but your intent is that the state would have a mandate or a position that this is what a college credit would be valued at, no matter what college someone may choose to take PSEO at.
To the testifiers.
Yep. Chair Kreisha, Representative Lawrence, thank you for the question. That is the intent of this language. I think MDE this year is reimbursing colleges at a rate of somewhere around $241 per credit, and we're just saying let's lower the standard, make it the same across all colleges at $125 a credit.
Okay. Very good. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think you thank you for having this hearing. I think a lot of us have a lot of energy around this issue, and we probably could talk even longer. I can take some of my questions offline. I just want to thank Superintendent Stumpf and Principal Nelson for coming down and, as folks have said, coming with solutions too. One quick question. When it came up, I think it was Representative Sensenmayer brought up a good question about being able to kind of see what courses kids are taking and where they're at. I know we have a really underutilized Common Course catalog for high school. I didn't know if we could maybe possibly look at adding in, do they have to, PSEO or College in the Schools, do they have to put those classes in that Common Course catalog? We're supposed to be tracking kind of who's taking those, what schools are offering. Would that be one option?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Sherm?
Representative Youakim, the Common Course catalog will contain the college and the schools programs. The districts are required to enter those, and as this system evolves, there's an attempt to try and classify them in similar ways. I'm not sure that the PSEO programs are, if they're not through an agreement, if they're entered into that system or not. I'm not sure who would be entering them, since the student would be enrolled at the higher ed institution at that time, but maybe the Pequot Lakes folks can correct me if they're required to enter the PSEO courses, but that's not something I'm familiar with.
Are you required to enter the courses in the Common Catalog?
Chair Kunish, we are not required. We do a placeholder in which we indicate that it was a college course through PSEO.
Very good. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe that's something we can further discuss.
Anything else? Okay. Well, members, thank you very much. Superintendent Stumpf and Principal Nelson, thank you. I think at least what I took away from this is that there's some things that we can talk about and work on with both the flexibility for the students as well as what the students are trying to do, and I hope we continue to do that. I suspect we'll see a bill moving forward. And as Representative Sensenmuir indicated, I would also be interested in being on that bill. And Representative Verding also raised her hand. So looks like we have a group that is excited about working this. Thank you again. And with that, members, that concludes our agenda for today. Our next meeting is Thursday, March 6th. Thank you all, and the committee stands adjourned.